Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Den Excelsior, the Mostly Marvel podcast. This is episode 127 for the week of, March 15th, 17th?
It's March 15th. The 17th March will be Sunday.
March 15th. And this week, we are talking about X2. X-Men. It's X2 or X-Men 2?
It's X2 X-Men United is the tagline.
X2 X-Men United.
The X-Men is just called, the movie's just called X2 officially, really. Yeah.
Oh, well, we're united this week with one of our favorite friends of the show, Travis.
Yeah. Ricky doesn't waste time. He just like.
Yeah, you're just in. Yeah. Nightcrawler in that movie. He just happens.
Welcome.
What's happening?
It's been a while, man, and I gotta apologize first up. I don't know if you've been on the show on this show in a while, but
no,
I think Black Panther or was it probably the Mandalorian show that we did that I never released because I got too busy.
Wow,
I never released the last two episodes of that show
tapes.
They are lost tapes, and I was feeling bad about it the other day. Life got too busy. Mm. Yeah, it's the problem with that show is like I was too anal retentive about the editing, like about adding all the different like things, so you see all the things that we're talking about, and it just makes the process so much longer. And that's why I like doing this. It's just us shooting the shit for like an hour talking about whatever we want. I don't have to edit anything. But yeah, welcome back. I think you've had a lot of things going on, but I don't care about most of them for this show. I just want to know what you've been nerding out on.
Oh man, what I've been nerding out on. Game wise, everybody's playing Helldivers.
The game's great.
I chose not to play Helldivers.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I played the first
just
one.
Just like aggressively, for no reason. You hate decided democracy. To hate, like,
well, it's
here's millions my of thing, gamers like, must be wrong.
No, it's that millions of gamers were more right about Baldur's Gate 3. I like my thing is, why would I ever leave that game? I love it so much.
You can play both.
Dude.
I haven't even played like a
month. I haven't played more than like an hour of Baldur's Gate, dude.
Oh my god! I finally got to a brothel last night, and I was like, "This is
what are you talking about? You're a traveling brothel. Don't get like don't
you are the
go around in that game, buck ass naked."
Yeah, but I got yes, I do. Okay. I finally got to spend my money on the things,
and I don't mean in game actually, but whatever.
Yeah, no pants on right.
You're like a fish who bought water. Like it's like why?
Exactly. So
Helldivers.
So that nerding out on that. The new Final Fantasy came out, so I'm sort of slow walking it, just because I wanted the last
part two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rebirth part two, right? Yeah.
Part two.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Movies. Dune 2.
Yeah.
Mother of God.
So Ricky, I sent you an email earlier today, yesterday. And one of the reasons I know I was blabbering about like all the things I forgot to say in last week's episode, and the biggest one for me is like, how did we not talk about Dune 2?
It wasn't the Dune crowd. We had a tight show last week.
It's because nobody asked me what I nerded out on last week. That's why. No, I agree with you, but Travis, do your elevator
pitch. Now you have the Dune time.
Do the elevator pitch right now to get anybody on board. You don't need to sell it to me, just so you know.
I have not seen Dune 2.
Okay.
What?
It's classic, you know, it's just classic tale, really. You know, like this Christ-like figure. You know,
classic tale about a holy war, right?
You know, yeah, about this straight up. I mean, honestly, but the thing about it is like, if you like Star Wars, even a little bit, okay, it's when you watched it, and it's clear where they got, where Lucas got some of his inspiration, and that's true. That's not hyperbole. So, you know, it's if you ever wanted to grow up into more like juicy sci-fi,
refined sci-fi,
You know, it doesn't get better than Dune, in my opinion. And and this is something that I don't say a lot about movies in general, but you have to see Dune in a movie theater that has the best sound possible. Because when I tell you it is an auditory, like, extravaganza, like, please believe me when I say, like, there's so much about the powers that are in that universe that are very audio based, right? Mm-hmm. To just the sound, you know, composition, engineering, and production that was in this movie. Like, if you don't see it on the biggest screen and the loudest, you know, possible, you know, system, you are cheating yourself out of an experience that you might not get anywhere else. And I say that as a person who, you know, was working on the Avatar sequels, right? And, you know, and what I'll say, like, Avatar has got it in visuals, like, especially in 3D, right? But Dune, from an audio standpoint, I defy you to find a more finely crafted experience.
When have you seen Madam Web?
I stand corrected.
Do I butter the popcorn bucket or go in dry when I watch
it? No, you can't go in dry. You gotta, you gotta butter that. Yeah, you got to.
Well, I love your elevator pitch. I didn't realize I was taking it all the way to the 50th floor.
You got to. It's it is so well acted. It is so well acted. And that's the thing, right? Is that in sci-fi or fantasy or any of these, you know, genres that are sort of like the nerd genres, right? Sometimes that comes at a cost, and that cost is like, you know, the verisimilitude, like, you know, that, like, do I believe this? Like, you know, like, do I feel? And there was nothing about Dune that made me feel like, you know, like Harrison Ford said, you could write this, but you can't say this or whatever. Yeah. All of those things, all of those grandiose moments, those moments that, you know, you're like, oh my God, you know, they were believable. They were truly believable and so well acted.
I didn't believe Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet, their romance. It was
really?
The chemistry was a little off on that. What? Yeah. Like, I could tell.
White savior.
Yeah, I'm not. You haven't even seen the movie, bro. You don't get to.
the sweaty scene.
I wasn't buying. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about the scene where Paul's riding Worm, right?
Like, oh yeah.
They're like teasing him, like, oh, you know, like, you're gonna die, and then they do that focus on Shani at that point. And everyone else is laughing, and she's dead serious. She's like, you're talking about my man.
But they're not acting, like, together. I'm saying it's the romance was the only thing I didn't buy. I love them in the movie, but I've seen her with Tom Holland in those movies, and that is chemistry. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, that's also real.
I know, but I'm saying once you've seen the real thing, you can tell when it's fake, right?
That's the day is real, man. She holds it down for her man.
Yeah. I felt really proud for Tom while I was watching Dune 2, because I was like, whoa, this, I'm not buying it. But other than that, the acting in that movie, like Javier Bardem, oh my God.
He owned it.
He owned that movie, and he made it into a comedy.
He's not, he's,
No, like
he got shafted in the first one.
He added comedy to that movie, and it was amazing.
Because basically, you know, without spoiling anything, he was like the lovable zealot.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is kind of scary too, right?
Yeah. 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 Which is totally Stilgar, you know, and so that was a great part about this is like you could see how gods were, you know, if they weren't real, they could be created.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I really love the way that he played, you know, Stilgar in that way, where he was like, he is as down as an apostle can get, you know? I know this movie's going to make $1 billion. It has to make $1 billion. Yeah. Like,
do they make a third one?
They already announced it
on Colbert a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just waiting. Yeah. And he's like, I got to wait for the script. And you know what? Hey, dog, you
take your time because I need those kids to get a little older, anyways.
Yeah. Denis can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He can do.
Where are we at on Blade Runner? His Blade Runner? That a you year know, or nay?
Okay.
I fell asleep through it and never went back. I fell asleep in the first one too.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I was okay with Blade Runner, right? Like, you know, I thought it was that was cool. You know, I just never, you know, conceptually, I thought it was cool. But as a movie, yeah, it's a little long in the tooth. But, you know, like there's great things about it. But as a whole, I was never like, oh, I'm a Blade Runner fan, you know. And so so he just came back and did a very, very beautiful version of the same movie I was kind of about.
That's my feeling.
I think that was like the last movie I cried in was that Blade Runner.
Because you had to sit there at all? Is that?
Yeah, I know, right?
No, the
Blade Runner, bro.
The like, joy love scene when they like sync up the holograms.
That I don't even remember that. That's how beautiful. Like
I was so maybe
beautiful. Were you asleep?
I was so asleep.
Go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is the difference between the new one and the old one is I actually went back and finished the old one and I was like, wow, that's a good movie. I never bothered. I think I was just annoyed with Jared Leto. Like, I don't know. He just gets on my nerves sometimes. Like, and also, like, old Harrison Ford isn't like the most entertaining thing to watch on screen anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Wait till you hear who's in Captain America 4.
I already know who's in Captain America 4. is that your way of segueing into the news? Because I think we've...
It can be.
Unless you want to talk more about Nerding Out. I caught Code 8 Part 1 and 2 on Netflix. Way better than I expected. The first one is way better. It's not a superhero. It's superpowers. So like... It's basically like, hey, 4% of the population is born with powers, and almost like X-Men, you know, like people don't trust those people, right? So like, what the government ends up doing is like making machines that can outperform these things, and they end up stealing all their jobs.
So X-Men.
It's kind of like that, but without having a super team. They don't have like a ringleader that's like, let's join together and
unorganized X-Men.
Yes, it's that. So what they do is they just turn to lives of crime and like they're like bank robbers and stuff like that, you know. And so like, but they have like nicknames for the type of, so when I say their powers are jobs, they literally have people like that hang out outside of like Home Depot waiting for work.
Nice.
Like that's where they're at. So like, for contract jobs, they're looking for electrics. They want somebody who's got electric powers and stuff like that. So, like, there's a finite pool of powers that people have.
Okay.
And, like, and certain ones are really good for contracting. And it's really funny. So, like,
that makes sense.
So they kind of like equate them to, like, you know, the migrant, like, worker experience. But Arrow, man, Arrow is like in the movie and he's Arrow. And you either love Stephen Amell or you don't, man. What's that?
Did he fail the sequel?
The sequel is not as great, but
is it? Will they release together?
You have failed the sequel.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what I mean. I got your joke. No, the sequel came out like a week or two ago, and I just that's how I found out about the first one. So I watched the first one, and I was more pleased than I thought I would be. It's a worthy entry into the superhero library, you know. So
I do have a recommendation because you know you said you're just nerding out, and I don't know why I forgot this, but The Gentleman on Netflix.
I've been tempted.
Guy Ritchie, mm-hmm. Sure, right?
Yeah,
Guy Ritchie, yeah.
Yeah, it reeks of him, but it's good though.
Most things of his reek.
His are good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
He's got a.
So I mean, yeah, he's got a style to him, you know.
Yeah, he's got a style,
and because of that, like, what does that style look like in the serial, like, you know, format? I think.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I dug it. I dug it.
Yeah, that's cool. What about you, Ricky?
Not much. Anything new? I'm peeking into Shogun. I saw a few minutes.
And how did I forget Shogun?
That's the show I'm gonna watch with the partner. So
it's so good.
It's good.
I'm waiting on that.
It's so good. How did I forget Shogun?
Did you watch the Godzilla show, Travis?
What Godzilla show?
The Apple TV Godzilla show.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Did you cry in that one, Ricky?
I was tearing up. There's some emotion in that show too. It's Kurt Russell.
Yeah, the most dramatic of actors, Snake right? Wiskin. Yeah,
yeah. They got.
Jack Burton
why would you say it's Kurt Russell like that? Like
I know.
You know, we grew up watching like Kurt that. Russell. I mean, that man doesn't make us
that's
cry.
That's almost like I would buy it if he said it's Sandra Bullock or something like that. Yeah. Okay. Like.
Yeah, you're telling it's heartwarming. Two people our age, it's Kurt Russell. Wait, that's yeah, what I mean. I know his work. I've never cried a single tear in my life in his work.
Me either. Yeah.
Doesn't mean I don't love him.
No. Well. All right. I got nothing else. Then. That's.
We're just trying to get to know you, Ricky. That's all.
All right. Want to know. Well, you want to get to know some news?
Yeah. Fine, I guess.
Yeah. Why?
All right, we got four all movie centric stories or entertainment centric stories this week. Note: we are recording this on the 12th, the Tuesday. So if shit pops off in the next 3 days, you know why we're not talking about it. Starting off at a convention this past weekend, Sam Raimi made a comment that there is a chance of Spider-Man 4 happening. Because he has a desire to do it, but if it happens, it will only be at the right time. Are we down with the Spider-Man 4 with Toby and Sam again, or should that book stay closed?
I don't know. Sure. Let's say yes. Let's have that experience and let's let him. What is the story that he wants to tell? Like because. That Venom story was a pile of shit. And
well, the original, it was supposed to be with the Vulture, right?
Vulture, like the Vulture. Yeah.
Do they revisit that? I think that's a big question
because we got a pretty good Vulture already. I don't want classic Vulture on screen. I'm sorry. I don't. I'll take the ones in Spider-Verse all day rather than. I don't ever want to see a dude in grown feathers. No. But I mean, there's plenty of Spider-Man villains that like, you know, we've never gotten Mysterio. Oh no, he did get Mysterio, but like he was a teched out Mysterio. He's teched out. I'm thinking of like classic ones, but like, I think they did a lot of the classic ones.
Kraven. Well, we're getting a movie with that.
he's about to get ruined in a few months. So like it's, I mean, he's kind of like the last great, like Scorpion. Classic one. Scorpion's cool. But I don't think he's like, there's not a lot of meat on those bones. You know what I mean? Like there's like a lot of these, like the greatest villains for Spider-Man, they're done unless we include, you know, Venom and Carnage, which I don't want to touch that. Like, not, no. So I don't know. There's a ton of stuff he could do. Like, the only reason I'm thinking in classic terms is because Sam Raimi only is operating off of what did I grow up reading in the 60s, you know? So like that's how those first three movies read. And that's why the third movie reads so badly, because he was forced to use a character that he knew nothing about in Venom, you know, like, so yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the story is that needs to be told, but I will say this, like, I do like my old Spider-Man stories. I like an old, you know, like 40 something Spider-Man, like that has to do, you know, the sad
has to keep doing it.
He has to go get his prostate examined and all these things, you know, like, it's a different thing. Like, it would be cool if it was him as a father, you know, that would be fun to see. But what about you, Travis? Do you care about this at all?
I couldn't be less interested in a production at all.
It was hard for me to sell this. I was just trying as hard as I could right now.
I mean, those, like, it's not that. It's when I think cinematically, like, what new areas there are to, you know, to explore. Like, why would you go back there? Like, seriously, like, yeah, go make a Miles Morales movie, a live action live Miles Morales.
That movie. I feel way more.
You know, like I'm. You got all my money for that.
Or Gwen Stacy. Right?
Or yeah.
Or any of them, Miguel.
Yeah. Bring back Bryce Dallas Howard as Gwen Stacy. Yeah.
I feel like the best thing they could do is beat Warner Brothers to the 2099 universe. Cause like, I don't know why Warner Brothers has not made a Batman Beyond movie yet, but like, they're dumb. They're just dumb.
Michael Keaton's got to get a little bit older.
You don't need it to be Michael Keaton. It doesn't need to be Michael Keaton. It's okay. It can be.
Yeah. It can just be
a great old actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I mean, that movie would be just badass. And I look, fundamentally, you know, DC's got to start like executing on some like pretty basic things first, right? Like, let's get this first salvo of gunisms, you know, done first.
Speaking on gunisms,
Blue Beetle kicked off the new universe, though.
Whatever.
He says.
Some gunisms. First little bit of news is The Batman Part 2 got pushed back to 2026, a whole year from when it was originally slated. And also, Gunn made comments this week that parts of season one of Peacemaker are going to be canon moving forward, and parts aren't. They're kind of doing a Daredevil Born Again. Going to exist in the new DC verse, but
okay, it's already messy.
Awkward bit at the end of the last episode will probably be cut.
I don't mind. Look,
I mean, like John Cena, but like,
yeah, I want John Cena, but just bring John Cena back.
I need them to stop worrying about like giant overarching canon for a minute and just make a good movie. Like, make a good movie. Just make a good Superman movie, and then
those don't have to be mutually exclusive.
No, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. But I'm saying, like, let's not worry about explaining where Peacemaker fits right now, and let's just worry about like getting some good content under our belt, you know, before we start connecting all the dots.
Yeah, I think that's like the difference between you know, a world builder and a customer. Really, you're speaking as a customer, you know, and he's speaking.
I'm speaking as an angry customer.
Trust me, you know, I'm a DC fan. Like, you know, like, I've been wrong several times.
A little more than that.
Way more than several.
It's your fault for coming back at this point.
It you know, maybe it is. But it ain't no Madam Web, I tell you that much. Oh.
Did you actually watch Madam Web?
No.
Oh, I'm not an idiot. We did it because we're stupid, and it was awesome.
It's fun.
Was it not really fun? I laughed so much in that movie. It was pretty fun. It's pretty fun. That's not going to make me go see it. Not that they meant it to be.
I'm sure they did.
Something that I laughed at, but it's hilarious. Yeah. Okay, what else you got on the news?
Last bit of news. This one came out today. It's kind of the hot off the press. As per the Hollywood Reporter, Bo DiMaio, the head writer of X-Men 97 and executive producer of the show that's coming out next week, has been fired. Has been removed from the company per an internal email.
The Hollywood premiere takes place tomorrow.
Yes.
This guy got canned right before the premiere.
His Instagram and socials are scrapped. Usually when a company makes note that they either say parting ways or let go, right? And this is more of a let go type of email.
Yeah.
That's probably not good.
It is not.
They waited until he finished writing on season two, by the way. Season two is already done. It's already written. Then they're like, okay, we're good. We're good. We got you. Later, man. Yeah, that's rough. I hope that I don't notice it in season three. I think that's all I can say, right? I hope that he wasn't so integral to the process that like it takes a giant drop in quality after he's gone.
I wonder how. Well, I guess
the big question is why.
How could he not?
Yeah.
Well, you're never gonna know, really.
Yeah, you won't know because it's a committee, right? It's a committee of people that like put these things together and stuff. So.
I think Ricky was saying like why they fired.
Oh, him. Yeah, we'll never know that. Just curious, Travis. Like, I know you weren't as young as me when that show was on TV, but did you miss that show? You did. That's a damn.
I missed that show. In a weird sort of way. And what I mean is it was like one of those things that was on and I never really quite paid attention to it because it was sort of, you know, I'm like an animation snob and that X-Men show always seemed like this Americanized sort of animation that was sort of subpar. And I was just like, I'm not with it, you know, and I just never really got into it. But I heard it was a great show. Everybody has very fond memories of it.
Do you know why people love it so much?
Because of Rogue and that meme.
not just that.
Okay, because because if that was what was going on, then I need to go back and see.
It was different back then.
It's more because. Different. Yeah, it's because that show they didn't try anything fancy, you know, like. Like Bruce Timm reimagined Batman in from the ground up when he did that show. And that show is like a masterpiece. That show is on my Mount Rushmore of American cartoons, right? Batman animated series. But right there next to it actually is X-Men for me because X-Men did the opposite. Instead of building the ground up, they actually really was the first show I've ever seen that used the source material as a direct one-to-one like translation. They just picked the best X-Men stories and put them on TV.
And that's so I've already seen it.
Yes. Yeah, you have, but it's really cool to see it like how fluidly it goes and how like they didn't really try to dumb it down for the kids too much. You know what I mean? The censors wouldn't let Wolverine murder people on the show, right? So instead he was cutting robots up and like cutting doors open for people and stuff. But I know that part sucks. But other than that, like the story beats that they were hitting, like they take you on that ride. They take you when they're like, okay, it's time to do Dark Phoenix. I guess we got to go to space with the Shi'ar. And you're like, thank you. I appreciate this. We're going to the bananas areas that the X-Men universe goes to. You know what I mean? Like they do all of the stuff. So like if you're a fan of the comics, it's like the Cliff's Notes, like really well done, you know, like where you just get to see all the highlight reels of the X-Men. And that's why I'm super excited for next week because I just want that. The reason I like X-Men is because it made X-Men accessible to so many more people. Right.
Sure.
Like, and I always love that when like I have friends that, you know, say like, oh, I never read the comics, but I grew up watching the show. I'm like, I know. I'm like, that's you know what? That's good enough. It's good enough for me for right now to have a conversation. To have this conversation, it's good enough.
So here's my issue. and I know this is gonna sound elitist, and I don't really care. Like, I'm looking at X-Men 97. Mm-hmm. And then I turn and I see What If. And then I look at 97 and What If. 97 What If. And I go, why? Like, why choose that style?
I'm there with you.
You know there's better styles out there. And like, you've gone with this
like Borderlands.
Yeah. And so to me, I'm like, I can appreciate it from a nostalgic standpoint. I can understand it from a nostalgic standpoint and from a cost standpoint. But, you know, I'm just like,
All right, fine. I'll enjoy my party without you. I'm excited. I'm so excited for next week. I'm happy that
are they releasing them all? Or
no, they're dosing them week. Out.
We're two nine and then
weeks, nine weeks. Feed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But okay. We can dip into our spotlight to kind of wet our X-Men whistle here a bit. X2 came out 2003, directed by Bryan Singer, the sequel to X-Men. Where do we begin with this movie? Let's take me back.
I'll tell you where we begin. This movie is a fantastic movie starring Rebecca Romijn and Stamos at the time, and a bunch of other people.
She's barely.
Dude, oh my god, she is so impactful. She makes the most out of every scene she's in. I was just overjoyed to be watching this movie, and just like I was like on the edge of my seat every time she showed up. Like every little thing she does. Like when her and Magneto are sitting on the in the back of the helicopter and look at, and like they're laughing at Rogue's hair. We love what you've done with your hair. And they're just being two catty bitches over in the corner. I'm like, I love it so much. But honestly, like I know I jumped a gun. We didn't even summarize this movie, but like the whole point of, you know, X-Men is they're this great metaphor for, you know, discrimination and so many of the injustices in the world. And like, there is one scene that I remember watching in theaters that just, it got me so good for so many reasons. And it was the scene right after Magneto and Mystique have saved the X-Men and they're camping out in the woods at night. And you see Nightcrawler and Mystique share a moment together. And as a nerd who grew up reading these comics, I was like, dude, that's mother and son. Like, and I'm waiting for it to be, because you can see they clearly look related, like in this movie too.
And yeah, they're both blue as hell.
Yeah, they're both blue as hell, right?
Yeah, all
blue. I would have asked, hey, what class do you go to?
But you know, he asks her the most, because you know, he's a very innocent character in this movie, and he asks her, you know, like, why, if you have this amazing ability, why don't you just disguise yourself all the time? And Rebecca Romijn does not have many lines in this movie at all. But when she says, because we shouldn't have to, and leaves, to me, that's X-Men. That's like, that's everything, right? Like that. And I feel like the older I get, the more powerful that one line is. Like, it just, it summarizes the entire thing. Everything else is just eye candy, right? Like everything else in X-Men is just like superfluous. Don't get me wrong, I love watching it and stuff, but we shouldn't have to is the entire point of this universe. And so I thought it was cool that she had one of the most powerful lines in that movie. And you know, also she like smiled and flipped off the bad guys every time she was like doing her acrobatics and all this crazy shit. She's just amazing. And so like I said, in the first movie, she carried a lot of the weight of coolness. And I feel like in this movie, she steals the show for me. So like, yeah, the story is pretty simple, right? It's if you've never read God Loves, Man Kills, it's just that. William Stryker hates mutants and he's going to do anything he can to stop him. He kidnaps Professor X, and builds a dark Cerebro, and he's going to use it to kill all the mutants in the world. And that is literally the comic book. And I think it's really cool that they did such a pretty faithful adaptation. But everything outside of that is just like, oh, look, Logan's got a mysterious past. We might learn five extra tidbits about that past and stuff. All the other X-Men are there. Like, they're just there. Cyclops gets a raw deal in that movie. I'm done. I'm gonna sit back. You guys can rebuttal or say whatever you want about this.
Take me back to 2003. What was your guys' kind of hype coming into this? Were we up on the upswing with the first X-Men movie? Where was this kind of more of a wait and see? Where were we at watching X2 when it came out?
I think the first X-Men movie that came out was pretty legit. This is pre-MCU. This is pre, like,
we are 5 years pre-MCU at this point.
Yeah, like at this point, to me, the only Marvel movie that was faithfully executed was Blade, and it wasn't even really a Marvel movie in that way.
Yeah.
And Marvel just cinematically just sucked as far as I was concerned. And then X-Men came out and I was like, wow, that's really good. And you have to understand, like, you know, this was a pretty precarious time. Like, you know, because when these superhero movies came out, you know, you had to do so much. You had to explain everything to people. You had to, like, tell them what the mutant is. You have to do all this stuff, you know. And it's funny because it reminds me of, like, you know, because I make video games. Like, it reminded me of, like, how you had to make a video game before, like, the Unreal Engine or the Doom Engine came out. And you had to make your own engine. You had to make your own world every single time you made a superhero movie. And so just certain things weren't accepted, you know. And so every movie was like a prequel to some degree.
But that's why Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are so pivotal in the first movie.
Absolutely.
They do all the world building for you.
They, like, really anchor that universe down.
But they do so much of it in the first movie that they don't really need them to do that in the second movie.
So
they take Professor X offline for a lot of the movie too, right?
Yeah, like, this movie, and I'm trying to think, like, before that, like, that to me, and I'm just gonna put this out here, like, when Cap, you know, like, calls Mjolnir to his hand and the crowd goes wild, right? To me, I had never felt that sort of energy in a movie, okay, the first for a superhero movie. And the first time I really felt that energy was at the beginning of X2 in that Nightcrawler scene. And it was because the whole time you're reading comic books and you're seeing, like, this, you know, this progression of panels, mm-hmm. you know, and it really is storyboarding as far as a movie is concerned. Right. And, you know, you're thinking to yourself, like, how will this look like IRL, right? Like, how would this really look? I mean, it would have to look badass, right? And so when Nightcrawler came on the scene and kicked everyone's ass in the room, and he's teleporting, and he's, you know, and he's bamfing all over the place, and you can see him, like, you know, like, cock back and one, and then when he teleports, he's, like, following through, and you're like,
yeah,
oh my God. After that scene happened, and I'm in the movie theater with all these people, and everyone goes, oh my God. And I'm sitting there going,
yeah.
Oh, like, if the rest of this movie is even close to this. And so for me, you know, there's that. And there is, at least to me, when you talk about Mystique, to me, the magic of Mystique, aside from those scenes, from an action movie standpoint, mm-hmm. was her choreography, because
yeah,
and I want you to replay this in your mind's eye, okay, as I say this, okay? In all her fight choreography, did she ever look phased?
No.
It almost seemed like a dance.
Yeah.
It was effortless. Like when she
Like smirking and flipping them off sometimes.
When she is dodging, it's like she knew where you were going to punch already, and she moved there. Like she wasn't really dodging you as much as she had already been a place where you weren't going to be. And I was like, you can't touch this chick, right? And so for me, like that was that went from skillful.
It's almost like
scary,
like mother, like son.
Mm-hmm.
God. They have the best action sequences in the whole movie. Both of
them. They do. They're really like the Nightcrawler one specifically. It's shot in such a way that it's very fluid, and you're never confused on what's happening or where he's going, because they allow you to see him multiple bamfs in a single frame.
Yes,
and so you're from that scene, you know what he can do. They throw some tail action in there. He throws a tail. And that tail shot's beautiful.
Visual storytelling is all you
need. It looks great. And everything I need to know about Nightcrawler is done in a minute.
Except the smell. They didn't tell us about the smell.
That's true.
He smell like ass? Is that part of his character?
Sulfur.
It's sulfur.
So, yes, he does smell like ass.
The bamps smell like ass.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's because he's actually teleporting to another dimension.
Yeah,
and then coming back out of it and bringing the
Azrael is Azrael, the Batman guy, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We will see Azazel in a few weeks. he's in Days of Future Past. First Class. He's in First Class. Yes.
It was such a treat for me to go back and watch this movie, because I remember watching this in theaters. And I've seen clips of it since, but I don't think I've ever like watched this movie as an adult. Mm. So I knew the Nightcrawler scene. I knew the dam stuff. I knew the scene with Bobby and his parents, but the pieces weren't connecting for me on how that story went. So it was really cool to see the whole narrative play out. And I think what I really enjoyed with this movie was, it is very grounded, and I kind of like that. You know, it's very grounded in that universe. I don't think, aside from Magneto and Professor X. Good.
Oh, I was going to say it's grounded, but somehow it manages to go more over the top than the first one did too, which is really cool. Because, like, as a reminder, there is an amazing scene where there are two fighter jets coming after the Blackbird, and Storm creates all the tornadoes ever, and that is a really cool sequence. It's really cool because you're like, dude, you do not f with Storm, man. Do not f with Storm. She will wreck you. Pretty much just Jean is more powerful than Storm, and that's, I think, right? Like that's where they are on the power scale. Don't mess
with Storm. But they do a good job of their power scale. Like, yeah, Storm does that thing, right? But she is, while she's going weather, she's also crazy, flying
a plane.
Yeah, or like Professor X is going Omega level with Cerebro taking out everybody.
For real.
You know, but they show I think they really do a good job of showing that effort, like that exertion on them, for them to do that power. So it doesn't feel, I won't say wasteful, but you know, it has meaning when they do the thing.
It's not contrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of contrived, I will say, like, the one thing that, like, it was a little contrived for me was, like, Stryker, he's kind of a jack of all trades in this movie. It's like, make up your mind. What's your chosen, profession? Because, like, I feel like you became the greatest adamantium blacksmith in the universe. But also, you have this whole other thing you really want to do, which is kill mutants and stuff. You know, like, it's... I understand that they kind of took two concepts and fused them together to give, you know, Wolverine at this point is your lead, and so you've got to give him something to do and some character arc. I know, right? That's how I feel. Like, I guess is how I felt, because yeah. like as an X-Men fan, I know that it, the world does not revolve around Wolverine.
Thank you.
And I really do love that Magneto says that to him twice in two movies. He's like, once again, you think everything's about you.
But he sells toys.
I know he sells toys. So I felt like Stryker had to be like hodgepodge, like, you know, mashed together with another character just to make it so that, you know, not only is what he's doing really like crazy and severe, but also he's intertwined in Wolverine's tragic.
Oh, I didn't know that. Stryker in the comics doesn't create Wolverine.
No, Stryker has nothing to do with Wolverine. Stryker is Stryker is a TV evangelist that hates mutants and is using the Bible as his weapon.
Was that the comic that got a lot of scrutiny when it came out? Because they were
probably right?
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a powerful comic. Like it's really like, dude, in like the first few issues, like the first few pages, like two children get gunned down. And it's
they
like
burn a cross in that comic, don't they?
No, but they do say the N-word.
Oh.
They do say that. I don't remember the cross. It might have burned a cross, but yeah, like I mean, I'm salting, like, just to be clear, we're framing the beginning of that story, which is showing you the hatred of man, and how it can be weaponized through religion. And when you know that that's the story that they based this movie off of, this movie kind of has like less of a bite to it. You know what I mean? Like, knowing that it could have been weaponized religion that is the reason that this is all happening.
I get why they didn't happen in 2003.
Yes. I think we all get why they didn't do it, but man, how much more powerful would it have been if somebody had the balls to do that? So when I see these, when I see these old movies, don't get me wrong. Like I love X-Men 2. I think it's a great movie. I think it holds up pretty damn well after all these years, right? But every time I watch these movies, I just can't wait to see how much better they do it the second time around. You know what I mean? Because like, I don't think you need to pull the punches now that they did in 2003, right? Because
absolutely not.
Stryker needs to be an evangelist because that is gross and it is awesome and it is. Our reality that we live in is people, you know, just through the power of their words can do so much evil in this world. And so I think that'll be a great thing to see. But regardless of all that, I did love Brian Cox as Stryker. I think you can do a lot worse than Brian Cox. And I think the other thing that makes him so awesome is because like he's such a villain in this movie, right? That he allows the other villain, Magneto, to kind of operate in this cool gray area, which I actually am way more comfortable with Magneto being in all the time because I think it's wrong to say Magneto is just a straight up villain. I think the reason he's my favorite villain in Marvel is because you can really relate with this guy. And if you can't relate with him, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Like
That's why Killmonger, like really in Black Panther was like,
You're not wrong.
Disagree with him. Yeah, like you're just sitting over here doing nothing. You know,
well,
like
exactly. Yeah,
like yeah. So that was that. So yeah, when Magneto, man, you're like, hey, man,
he's a man of principles. Yeah, like he's like, I got to help the X-Men right now, but I could probably, you know, I could do my thing too.
And this is why, you know, to me at least, why it makes sense when they say that. You know, what you're looking at is you're looking at a Martin Luther King and Louis Farrakhan, for example, you know, or a Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, because, you know, they want the same things, but, you know, one is by hook or by crook and the other is by, you know, through principle. And it's really a cool thing to see play out. And I tell you, and I know. I just know, and I know this because Feige is is on his game. He really is. And you know, and I know that he knows this about X-Men. I know that he knows this.
Who's your new Magneto and Professor X? What's your dream casting? Everyone wants Giancarlo and Denzel.
I would really love that.
I don't think that we can still realistically have Magneto be an Auschwitz survivor.
I don't think the span is too long.
The age, right?
The age is
Namor's too long. Pretty old and he's a mutant.
But Namor's like that's one of his mutations, is he lives forever.
He doesn't leech. I mean, they can make it work if they wanted to.
My point, a recent atrocity.
He doesn't have to be a Polish Jewish person anymore. You know what I mean? If that doesn't have to be your limitation, where do you go with it? You know, so I don't want to start. I don't want to spend the rest of our show listing atrocities in human.
I just asked for actors, and you took it to atrocities.
I'm just saying, it
would be in Africa, or it would be in parts of Europe, Crimea, or there are places that you can, you can go to, help Gaza and Israel. At this point, there's enough of these places where. Whole scale atrocities are done, you can be timely in that way, because that's the tragic part about the human existence now.
Iron Man, right?
There's not a shortage of people who are just jacked up.
They took Iron Man and they said they just replaced Vietnam with the Middle East. And it's like, that works.
I'll flip it for a second. Does most modern incarnations of, I guess, recent of Professor X, he's not in the chair anymore. Does our new Professor X still operate with the chair?
Yeah, I think you keep the chair. Dennis, you can speak a little bit more authoritatively, on this, of course, but I think that, I think there are certain defining characteristics of characters, and Professor X, even though in the comic book, there are times where he's walking around, it's just not my Professor X. It's just kicking around.
I'm fine with it as long as they don't do the James McAvoy thing in X-Men Dark Phoenix, where she puppeteers him and she makes him look she makes him walk. And that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen an actor do. I'm like, you're trying to fake a disabled man being forced to walk against. No, don't stop, James McAvoy. Don't do this. You look embarrassing. I always, in general, prefer when an actor, if they can hire a disabled person to play the part, that's even cooler for me. I understand. I've always given Patrick Stewart a pass because he's actually probably the best disabled actor or faker I've ever seen in a movie. I watch his legs like a hawk when I'm watching those movies, and it's impressive. It's impressive how committed he is to it, because James McAvoy sucks at it. Just so you know, I'm just telling you. And so does that douchebag from Avatar. I think it's intrinsic to the character. I don't think I would want him to not do it, but I would rather he just be that way. And don't tell me the origin story, because I think that's the grossest part of First Class, is the whole time I'm just sitting there annoyed waiting for him to get paralyzed. And I'm like, what is that experience that I'm sitting in a movie waiting for a man to get paralyzed? Don't do that. I don't want that. But I do get why they have walking actors, because in his mind, he doesn't have that restriction. But you could always CG it. Whatever, it's fine. What else about this movie do you want to talk about before we go, because I do have one thing. Do you guys know who my favorite X-Man is?
Colossus?
No.
Were they in this movie?
I've been told that my choice of X-Men favorite makes me like cops.
You like Cyclops?
Cyclops is my favorite X-Man. And well, boy, did he get done dirty in this movie.
See, like, and that's all that. Look.
One of them was going to get the short end.
Look, and I'll say this until I'm blue in the face. I'll say it one more time really quick. Like, to me, Cyclops is Maximus from Gladiator. And, you know, he is a field general to the nth degree. Like, you know, he is that battle coordinator that makes X-Men X-Men. And not only that, the last thing you want to be is on the receiving end of that blast. Like, but it is. Yeah. And I've never seen that.
But the thing about him is he's a man of principle, right?
Yes.
And he is so bought into everything that Professor X has taught him that he believes it more than Professor X.
Yes.
And so like, it hurts my heart to know, like when I read God Lives, Man Kill, the way they beat Stryker in that movie is on national TV. Cyclops talks him down. Like, he basically, you know, explains why everything he's doing is wrong and you know, how it's so important for all of us to find a way to live lives filled with hope rather than hate, you know? And so it's this awesome thing. And then they go back home in the epilogue of that story and Magneto's like, hey, we only staved this off temporarily. It's going to get worse. You guys want to join up with me? And for a split second, Charles wavers and he's like, man, I've been doing this thing so long. Maybe we do go with Magneto. And once again, Cyclops stands up and says, yo, this is not what you taught me. All right. Like, we have to do things that the means matter just as much as the ends. Right. And when you hear Cyclops say that, and then you go and watch X2 and he just gets like knocked out by Jean Grey. And it's like, what is the point of this character in this movie?
Yeah.
It's so frustrating to me.
Yeah, I hate it.
So it keeps this movie from being higher on my list of best superhero movies ever, but it's still pretty high up there. Like, I would say, like, for me, Travis was saying those nerd moments, like, I gotta say, I probably felt them a 2 years earlier in Spider-Man, but you know, the Nightcrawler thing puts this thing in a high pedestal compared to most movies from back in this time. I will agree with that for sure. What, just curious, before we get going out of here, where does this one rank in all of your X-Men movies, including Deadpool's?
Ooh.
like is this one of your favorite ones, or is this like your least favorite? It's no one's least favorite for sure.
Top three.
I remember liking First Class a lot, but I saw it when I was 15, maybe. So at least for right now, I think this movie lives in my top three for sure. I really don't hate the Deadpool movies, but I don't love them as much as other people do. But
I think the Deadpool movies are the most X-Men movies that we've ever gotten for sure.
There's heart in this movie that I don't think the recent films captured.
That's true.
And I think there's something to be said about that. This movie's saying something, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah. For me, I think, honestly, this is my favorite X-Men movie. Like, the Deadpool movies get a lot of the nerdy stuff accurate. Like, they get it really good. But the problem with the Deadpool movies is we replace the mutant hatred with fun, you know, dick and fart jokes and all this, and gore and violence and stuff, which is all great. It's very entertaining. But this movie is the pinnacle of conveying what that experience is. And if you can't see the thinly veiled metaphor that's going on in this universe, then you're probably the guy that's complaining that X-Men 97 looks too woke. So
where we'll end it next week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be talking. Are we talking X3 next week with a little bit of 97 peppered in?
We're gonna do it.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, Travis, for joining us. And with that, true believers, enough said.